Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams, and I am joined for the fifth time by my colleague at Sportsnet, the one and only Eric Francis, who covers the Calgary Flames. Eric, thanks so much for taking the time. How much fun has this been for you to maybe surprisingly be in a covering a Flames team in a playoff chase?
Well, it's funny. You're probably in a similar position right now where, for so many years, Ottawa's been kind of knocking at the door and everyone wondered if they'd finally break through. And it sure is kind of feeling that way right now, the way they've been rolling. Calgary's a little different in that this is all completely unexpected and it's lasted a whole lot longer than anybody thought. And it may end up falling a little bit short, which I think is still the prevalent feeling in Calgary. But this team has really endeared itself to the local fan base, and for doing what they've done despite not being able to score goals. I wrote a column the other
I know.
day about how they're last place in the league in goals for, and I was curious to know how many times in NHL history a team that's been finished, as the lowest scoring team has actually made the playoffs, and it actually happened once. The Boston Bruins did it in 2011-12. They ended up winning the Stanley Cup the very next year. So Calgary Flames may be in good company if they can kind of repeat that feat. But anyway, for now, they're just happy to be staying in games and doing it with goaltending and a lot of heart.
I guess from your perspective, like obviously you mentioned, it's Dustin Wolf is probably going to be. He might. I think people in Calgary will say he's the Calder Trophy winner. Maybe people in Montreal would disagree, and in San Jose. But what have you seen? Like, how surprised are you just that they've been able to find ways to win with a pretty young team surrounded? You know, they have the core players of Backlund, Kadri, Huberdeau, Coleman, obviously Uyghur and Ras. Anderson on the back end, but it seems like the young players have stepped up at the same time. Like, how surprised are you that it's kind of found a way to kind of mesh together and somewhat work?
Well, it's the veterans are the ones who kind of set the standard and the bar for the youngsters to follow. And the veterans really deserve a ton of credit for basically saying, this is how we're going to play. If you're not in line, that's fine. We'll either have you traded or you'll be sitting. This team has got here on work ethic, but mostly they've got here on defense and goaltending. And if Dustin Wolf, you alluded to the Calder Trophy race, and there's no question he's going to be a finalist and should be a finalist. I think Michkov has kind of dropped out of the race. But, hey, all three are going to be great players, I think, for a lot of years. But all I would say, and hey, we still got 18 games to go to see if Wolf can finish this job and get them into the playoffs. If he can, I think that his argument would be as strong as anybody's. There's no question, though, of the three, Lane Hutson, Celebrini, and Wolf, that Wolf is the most important to his team. Without Dustin Wolf, the Calgary Flames are a bottom 5-10 team in the league. With Wolf, they may be a playoff team, which is an incredible thing for a 23-year-old at any position, but especially as a goaltender. The biggest question mark going into the season for the Calgary Flames was goaltending. It's turned into their biggest asset, which nobody could have predicted.
What have you seen from him being behind the scenes and seeing him kind of day to day? I know Julie McKenzie wrote, you know, talks a little bit about how he's a quite laid back guy for a goaltender. How maybe like what's he like behind the scenes, and why do you think he's been so effective this season?
Well, the guys in the room have laughed even when he was kind of dipping his toe in the league last year and the year before, at his confidence. I mean, he's always carried himself with a confidence that's reminiscent of a guy who's 31 years old and has won a Vezina. And that's not to say he's cocky. It's just that he's dominated at every level he's ever played at. You can almost understand why he carries himself with this air of invincibility. He's 163, 165 pounds. He's just a little guy. You can't believe that he's that confident. And, they're throwing to the wolves, so to speak, in the NHL. And he's maintained his brilliance at the NHL level. So, yeah, he's very laid back. He's very confident. And it's funny, the players kind of feed off that confidence. They certainly feel confident when he's in their net, that's for sure.
It's funny you mentioned that because I talked to a player that will be, you know, remain nameless just about the difference between in Ottawa, like the difference in goaltending from this year to last year, where last
Oh,
year they were at the
huge.
bottom of the league, and they were just like, yeah, like it just the difference in confidence and being able to be aggressive is just so noticeable. And I wonder if that's really, you talked about like you just play hard, work hard, stay in games. It seems like that's kind of been the motto, and then you have one of the best goalies in the league to back you up.
Well, it's funny, with Linus Olmark in Ottawa, this is a guy who, he's one of Vezina, he's one of the best goalies in the league, and it totally changes your complex. Like, I asked Ryan Huska, the Flames coach, the other day. I said, "Are you insulted when someone says the only reason you're here right now in this playoff position is because of your goaltending?" Like I said, does that? I assume the coach would be insulted by that and say, "No, we play strong defense and we have a good system and we get timely goals and blah blah." He goes, "No." He goes, "Goaltending is a huge part of the game. That's no secret to anybody. The fact that our goaltender's, been this outstanding and got us to this point, that's nothing to be embarrassed or ashamed about. We've supported him in various ways, but that's not something that makes me bristle. Like, we're fortunate to have a goaltender like that." And same with Ottawa. Like, Ullmark is a guy who I picked up in my pool because I just felt like he changes everything in Ottawa. And now that he's passed his injuries and everything, I think he's won five in a row, or the team has anyway. And he's been in for four of those, or whatever the numbers are. I just feel like that gives me the confidence from afar to think that they're finally going to break down that door and get into the playoffs. I'm sure internally it does even more than that.
I guess with the team, like, riding the wave of this confidence, obviously they lost that game against Vancouver, of course, and they were right there, and they could have easily, taken a bit of a stranglehold, fallen back. Like, it seems like from afar, this Flames fan base is quite satisfied with the season, for the most part, just because it's like riding the wave of, low expectations and them being superseded. What is like, is it a disappointment now if they don't? If they don't make the playoffs, if they're this close, and like, what's your gauge on the fan base and obviously the team would be disappointed, but the fan base itself.
Well, there's still a quite a There's a percentage of people in this city who've wanted this team to tank all year long. Like, they don't like that the Calgary Flames are kind of ruining one of their draft picks moving forward here by doing this. And I just think that's so misguided in this world. And I can tell you, when I talk to Flames ownership about their mantra, their push every year to try and make the playoffs while rebuilding, which is not easy. It's a term I came up with called the high build, the hybrid rebuild.
I love it.
I'm not sure if it's catching on, but I've been using it. So, it's a unique way to try and rebuild, retool on the fly, whatever you want to say. But they point to Ottawa, they point to Detroit, they point to Buffalo, and the whether it was a pure tank or if it's just the way it kind of unfolded, it's a tough thing to rebuild a culture and a winning attitude after all those years of losing, and then you just think you can flip a switch and then all of a sudden you're a winning. You have a strong culture. It doesn't happen that way. So whether the Flames make the playoffs or not, to me, the base is there. They've got a really strong core and a culture of winning, and they're moving in the right direction. So I'm not sure people would be too disappointed if they don't make the playoffs. I mean, everyone's excited about the Sea of Red returning to the playoffs at some point. But I think you're right when you kind of hint that, is it really that big a deal if they don't make it? At least they're moving in the right direction. But once you get caught in it and in the middle of it, you really do want this to continue. So I think people are kind of being swept up into it, hoping, but knowing it's still a long shot.
I guess from my vantage point, and obviously you know the team way better than me, and I'm not trying to kind of not like I'm not trying to go over your opinions, but from my perspective, it's like they have a good core of players, but there's no outside of Wolf, which is a great revelation this season. There's no like clear superstars kind of coming up.
No.
Maybe Parrick if everything hits right, but how do you think a team can go from like pretty good? Good core to like that next level of a cup contender. Like, what's that pathway for this Flames team in your mind?
Well, it's not going to happen next year or even the year after. And the goal really is for this to all kind of come together and then to be a legitimate contender when their new building opens in 2027. That's kind of
Okay.
in the back of management's mind as well. Because guess what? Ticket prices are going to rise, and you're going to have to sell this team and these new tickets. So I think that they've got, they've been stockpiling draft picks, and the more you stockpile, the better chance you're going to hit on one or two of them in a big way. Zane Parekh is the guy you alluded to. I think he will start next season with the Calgary Flames because he can't go back and play in the minors next year. He either has to play junior, where he's absolutely destroyed the competition 2 years in a row, 30 plus goals as a defenseman. I mean, it's insane. The only guy who's ever done that in the history of the OHL is a guy named Bobby Orr. I'm not saying Zane Parekh's going to be Bobby Orr. I'm just saying the trajectory sure looks good at this point in time. So they do have some pretty impressive youngsters in the pipeline. And in 2 or 3 years, we're going to start to see more and more of them kind of bubble to the top. The other thing is the Calgary Flames have $18 million worth of cap space right now. They decided not to use it at the trade deadline because the prices were too high and the opportunity wasn't there. And I don't think the time to strike is now anyway. But, this summer, potentially a guy like Mitch Marner is on the market. And I'm not suggesting he would come to Calgary. I'm just saying that over the next couple of years, with all this cap space that they can weaponize at some point, they could maybe get in on a Rantanen if he was going to be made available this summer, or a Mitch Marner. They would at least be able to put together the sort of package with the money that would be comparable to anybody, if not over the top. A new building that's exciting for an organization, a team that's on the up and up, and a core that's pretty good moving forward. So, and a world-class goalie, theoretically. So, that's how they could get from this to the next step, which is spending that money and also seeing some of these young stars really flourish, the NHL stars.
How do you think the expected rise of the cap in the next couple of years by a lot of, from tens of millions of dollars? Like, do you expect them to be close to a cap team with a new building and all that, like in a couple of years from now or even next year, where they're getting closer to that rather than having, as you said, $18 million in kind of dead cap space?
It depends when they decide they want to strike on that, like and go for that big that guy. Like Sam Bennett is going to be a UFA this summer, it looks like, and
That'd be interesting.
right, coming back to Calgary. But like, is he the guy? Is he that? He's not even a number one center. He's a really incredible number two. We've seen him in different capacities at Four Nations and stuff. Like, he would move the needle a little bit, but I don't know. Does he want to come back here? I don't know. Is he the guy you spend that big money on, or do you wait for a real legitimate number one guy? I don't know. Sorry, I got off track there. What was the question?
I was just how do you think they're going to use their cap space, or
Oh,
and
yeah.
do you think they're going to still spend to the cap in maybe 2, 3 years when the team gets a bit
Yeah.
better?
Oh,
And
yeah. Like this team has spent to the cap for the last 20 years, ever since the cap came in what, 05? Like they've always spent to the cap. Ownership is committed to doing that. They're not scared to do that. They deserve full credit for always spending to the cap. It just so happens right now that in this moment of time where they lost a bunch of core players last year, saved a bunch of money, now is, weaponizing that cap space is something that not enough GMs ever get to experience. As long as they do it right, it could really have a massive impact almost overnight if you go and get the right guy or two. So yeah, they will spend the cap when the time is right, and it'll probably be timed out exactly when that new building opens.
I guess, it's interesting kind of the cards that Craig Conroy has been dealt and kind of his moves. Like, obviously the Farabee Frost trade was quite interesting. I think they've both been maybe a bit slow to start, but Farabee scored that, I think, the only goal against the Habs, which was obviously the game winner. Like, what have you seen from Conroy this season in terms of like that trade? Like, how would you evaluate it, and what do you think he's going to do moving forward? Because there's a couple key decisions with maybe extending Wolf and Rasmus Anderson. Like, what do you think is kind of on the horizon for Craig Conroy?
Well, what I've seen from Craig Conroy is something that I don't think is easy for a young GM, which is patience. Like he's been tremendously patient with everything he's done. And boy, I think when you're a new GM in the league, I think there's an inherent pressure to go out and make moves and put your stamp on a team and really show that you mean business and establish yourself. I think he's done just that by being really patient. Look, I think at the deadline, he did the right thing by not adding or subtracting to this team. He had added a month earlier with two significant guys, but they were all part of the big plan over the last year since they lost Elias Lindholm. They've been trying to get an impact centerman, and they finally found one in Morgan Frost. They still need to find another one or two, but he took his time to find that deal. It hasn't been a huge payoff as of yet. And I'm not, you know, time will tell how that really works out. But it wasn't made to just add to this team and make a big splash right away. It was made so that these guys would can continue to grow with a young team. So time will tell how that works out. But I think for all the right reasons, it was a great move. And then again, you know, patience. It's, you know, he will sign Wolf, no question about it. He knows it's going to be expensive. Whatever, that'll be the cost of doing business for a guy who's getting you into a playoff race. And then the big one this summer is Rasmus Anderson. You know, he's got 1 year left on his deal after this year, and on July 1st, you could start negotiating with him to an ex for an extension. And I think Rasmus would be open to that conversation. But I think they'll find out pretty quickly where everybody's at in terms of expectations with the cap going up. If I was a defenseman like him, a number one defenseman on a team, I'd ask for the moon, the stars, and the sky. And the Calgary Flames may, you know, if he does that, which I think he will do, Calgary Flames be like, okay, you're our number one defenseman, but we're not sure if that's the sort of money we want to pay you moving forward at this juncture in our retool. And they may just cash in on his value in on the open market with 1 year left on his contract and trade him. That's how I think it's actually going to unfold. If I were to make a bold prediction, it would be that Rasmus Anderson will be traded this summer. However, they may deem him to be invaluable. He is a huge part of this team's success, but he's minus 22 this year. His numbers are not great offensively. Been a tremendous leader, blocked shots. I think he's third in the league in block. Like he's really elevated to a number one defenseman. He shuts down the other team. But do those numbers point to a guy who's a real number one in the NHL who deserves $9 million or maybe $10 million a year? Only the Flames can answer that.
I guess with that, from what I'm hearing from you, is that it's unlikely that he's going to be showing up on day one of the season without a contract as a Calgary Flame. Do you think, like, how likely do you think that's a possibility where they?
That's a good point. I would agree with you. Like, if they either get a sense that this is something that could get done, or else they move him. And you know, like the Rantanen situation, they just got the sense that it was never going to get done. Rantanen was stunned that they bailed on him early, but that's the dangerous game of throwing out huge numbers in a negotiation. If you really do want to stay, you may not want to play that game. You may want to be a little more accommodating earlier on. Otherwise, you could end up being the next Rantanen. And, you know, like I think if he could do it again, he would have lowered his ask and remained a Colorado Avalanche. So, hey, maybe Anderson is content to play that game, roll the dice. And if they trade him, then that's fine because then the next year he can test free agency. I don't know. We'll find out.
I just hope for Flames fans it's not like what happened with Rantanen, and he finds himself in Dallas, which is basically the biggest competitor to Colorado, and maybe in Anderson's case not become an Edmonton Oiler or something like that through free agency. But
It's funny when I ask Anderson about, you know, signing here and everything, like, you know, he's saying all the right things in terms of he loves Calgary, he wants to stay. And I think every guy should say that about his team when asked a question like that. You can go back on it later and say the money didn't work, so sorry, I gotta go. But he just said, I hate Edmonton and Vancouver. I'm a Calgary Flame. Like, talk about a great way to endear yourself to the fan base. And pick, you know. He isn't very well liked around the league. He knows that. He's the one who said that to me, because he's such a smack talker. But ask Brad Marchand if he really cares about that right now. A lot of people around the league are like, how could Brad Marchand go in that room after the trash talking that went back and forth between him and Tkachuk? Hockey players, as soon as you're traded, you go to the room and you laugh about your past clashes and you move on. That wouldn't be a problem.
I guess what's been like part of kind of the upswing in this team this year has also been Jonathan Huberdeau being like a productive player, maybe not up to his contract, but at least much better than his first two seasons in Calgary. What have you seen from him? Just like, what do you think he's done this season to elevate his game back to becoming a really productive top six forward?
Well, he made a commitment to play defense and, you know, play two-way hockey. And his kind of mindset was, I need to help this team some way. If I can't score points, I don't want to be useless to this team. So how can I better help the team in the big picture? And he had a big sit down with the coach last summer, and they decided, okay, why don't we use you on the power play or penalty kill? We'll use you on the penalty kill. We'll get you more ice time. He wanted more ice time. And that also keeps them in the flow of the game on games where there's a lot of penalties. So he really has turned himself into a much more responsible 200-foot player, which every player on the Calgary Flames is required to play, or you don't fit into the system here. So that's what he's done. He's a better player defensively, and it's translated him to being more productive offensively as well. So you're right. He's not living up to a $10.5 million payday, but he's been a leader on this team in every way possible. He is their leading scorer, tied with Kadri, and he's had some extremely timely goals and timely, assists with Kadri. We say that Wolf is the number one reason this team is in the playoff hunt. Kadri and Huberto would be tied for second in terms of impact. They're the only offense this organization has, and without them, they would be a bottom three or four team in the league, no question.
Nazem Kadri in the playoffs is it strikes a bit of fear in opponents and maybe myself as well. I guess you're talking about obviously at the beginning how Dustin Wolf has really elevated this team and Kadri and Huberto, but how much credit do you think Ryan Huska deserves for where this team is and really punching above their own weight?
Oh, huge. I mean, he's a real player's coach in that he even says, like, I could put in all the systems in place I want and put all, the X's and O's and have all these dreams on how I think we should play. But if the players don't buy in, I'm nobody, I'm nothing, and I get nothing. And so he's worked very closely with the leadership group of six veterans on this team, the Andersons, the Kadris, the Huberdos, the Backlunds, the Colemans. He leans on all those guys and Uyghur, and they work together collaboratively, whether it's staying overnight on road games instead of getting in at 3 in the morning to another city, or extra days off, or fewer skates, or just the system. It's been a real give and take, and it's nice. That's kind of the new era of coach. The old way where they say jump and you just jump doesn't work that way anymore. So he's really collaborated well with the players. They respect the hell out of Huska. He respects the hell out of them. And because of it, they work for each other in a perfect way. Like, 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 I just want to add, I've heard some people say Huska, should win the. I've actually heard some people locally here say that he should be coach of the year. Look, what Spencer Carberry's doing in Washington is ridiculous. So there, that's a slam dunk for me. And kind of like how Hellebuck is a slam dunk for the Vezina. You can talk about Wolf getting some votes for the Vezina. I don't think that's way off base, but don't talk about him winning the Vezina. Same with Huska. He could get some votes for Coach of the Year, no question. I think he deserves some. But there's one guy and only one guy on the top of that list to me, and that's him. And there's other great coaches coaching stories too. Like if the Habs were to be able to get in the playoffs, I think you got to look at that coach pretty well. There's five or six coaches that really deserve it to me. Huska's in that group, but he's not near the top.
I guess with that, you talk about him developing those relationships with players. Like, have you seen a difference between him maybe in year one as like a rookie compared to this season in terms of coaching philosophy and just being around the team?
Yeah, he feels more comfortable, and he's gotten a lot of out of these players last year as well. He's got the right system and culture, like I said, which is so key here. He's helped build that culture and establish the way, because the culture was broken here under Darryl Sutter. There's no question about it. It was a horrible place to play for everyone involved. He's come in and changed that, and he says he's more comfortable. But the other thing he says is, like, in my second year, I now get a little bit more in terms of respect and explanations from referees. When he wants the ref to come over and talk to him, as a first year guy, he said they would blow me off all the time. Second year, they come over a little more. He still can't hold a candle to like Pete DeBoer or some of these other guys. They get an explanation every time from the refs. I only get one every once in a while, but it's growing. It's getting better.
Oh my God. I've heard enough refereeing stories that I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but that is hilarious.
Yeah.
I guess with that, like I feel like with this team, some of to his credit, it's like managing the young and the old too, right? Like Zary's played well, Coronado's had played a bit better. How much do you think this youth movement has kind of taken a step this season?
Yeah, I think it has. Derry hasn't had the season he would want, and then he got injured there for a while. Like I don't think there's any question he'll be the star of this team offensively moving forward. There is an argument that maybe he was one of their best forwards up until he got injured, but it hasn't translated into points. Coronado's taking a big step. He's going to get 25 or 20 goals this year. And I don't think there's any question he's a 30 goal scorer in this league at some point in time. These youngsters on defense, they've got a number of youngsters who've really stepped up and filled some tremendous shoes. Braden Paul's a guy who kind of comes to mind, and Kevin Ball has been phenomenal for this team playing on the top pairing. They didn't know what they had in him when they traded for him. So yeah, there is this core of youngsters that's real that have really grown this year. Pospisil hasn't had the year he would like to have following his breakthrough last year. So it's kind of been a mixed bag with the youngsters, but at the end of the day, they're all getting more and more reps, more and more experience, and feeling more and more comfortable. So that's a good thing. They're learning by trial by fire, and long term, that'll help them all.
So, before I let you go, I guess what's your prediction? Is this team gonna make the playoffs? Are they gonna find a way to squeak in?
Man, you know me, I don't like to sit on the fence, but I'm sitting on the fence on this one. Like I'd say they probably have a 33% chance of making the playoffs right now, which is not going out on a limb at all. But them, St. Louis and Vancouver, and I know Utah's there too, so maybe I should say 25% chance. So those aren't great odds, but the schedule for the Flames moving forward is tough. The next couple games, they've got Zary, suspended and Backlund out week to week. Those are some significant holes. I'm skeptical that they can hold on, but that would not be an indictment of this team. I'm just trying to keep it real. So they're in tough to get into the playoffs, but hey, with Dustin Wolf, I would never say no. I would never say they can't stay in this race. And with the heart that they've exhibited all season long, I'm not going to count them out at all.
Before I let you go, I want to ask you about the arena. Is it gonna like be ready in 2 years? Like, as someone in Ottawa, let's just say the arena talks are not going well. So I want to kind of maybe ask for an update from you in terms of what's happening in Calgary.
Well, Alex, arena progression is not something that has gone well in Calgary for 20 years until we finally got this deal. But I drive by the massive hole that they're building the new arena in every single day, and they're going 24 hours a day. Sometimes they're going overnight with whatever machinery is going, making a whole lot of noise. So I am no expert. I know that as someone who's done a bunch of home renos over the years, I'm very skeptical that it'll be done on time because no reno I've ever been a part of has ever finished on time or building project. But I'm led to believe, that it will be ready on time. The goal is to have it ready by the summer of 2027, and then have some test run events leading up to training camp, and then open the season in the new building. So I'm optimistic, and everyone I've talked to about it is still optimistic too. So let's keep our fingers crossed.
How much do you think that will just change the whole kind of vibe around the team and landscape for the organization with that new arena?
I think it just kind of puts a pep in your step if you're a Flame or in the organization. I don't believe for one second that anybody in the history of sport has ever signed as a free agent somewhere just because of the building they get to play in or the building they don't get to play in. They avoid. I get that players will avoid coming to cities like maybe Calgary because their arena is not state of the art, but it's kind of a baseline right now. I go to every arena in the National Hockey League. I can tell you they all are pretty awesome, and especially all the new ones. So I don't think it'll help attract free agents, but it's not the reason you're going to attract free agents. It's one less reason to not come here, that the Calgary Flames don't have to deal with anymore. So I think it allows everybody to puff up their chest, feel even prouder to be a Flame, and feel that they're building something, on the ice, but also physically building something that's exciting moving forward too. So that's kind of how I look at it.
Has that been something that the Conroy ownership has tried to almost dispel the narrative of people wanting to leave the city, right? Or like leave Calgary? Has that been something like a collective effort of sorts? Because as someone in Ottawa, I also understand that narrative to some degree.
Yeah, like, look, you can't deny that it's, they've had trouble keeping people here, dating back many, many years. And I get it. Like, I'm as proud of Calgarian as you'll ever meet, but if I had my choice between 31 other cities, half of them being warm weather cities or whatever, a third of them, I'd take a pretty good look too, right? So, and they have better arenas. They're not in the middle of nowhere like Calgary is. It's not as cold as Calgary is. Isolated. It's a small market here, like Ottawa. Like, I lived in Ottawa too. I know all the problems that we have to deal with as a smaller market, team. So, what I can tell you is that the ownership group is working very hard to make sure that that changes, and they're doing it by way of little things like when Frost and Farabee were traded for, Craig Conroy jumped in one of the owner's jets, private jets, and literally went out there with the PR guy, picked them up, and brought them back to Calgary the next day. Like, that's incredible leadership from the owners, however you want to put it. But they want people to know that they're serious about showing that they are a first-class organization in every single way. And that's one example of what they've tried to do to make this a more attractive place. And, I think you'll see some of the bells and whistles that they're putting into the new arena for the players and in and around where the players habitate every day. You'll see that everything will be done with first class in order. So I think they're trying to change that narrative by being as good as they can possibly do. They can't change the weather, they can't change where we're located, and they can't change the fact that we're a city of only 1.5 million. But what they can show everybody is that the culture here is first class and that this city is first class as well.
I will say, just being around a team in Canada that is winning, I think there's no place better to play than a Canadian market when your team's good. I still remember 04 as a little kid and how excited I was, even though I wasn't a Flames fan, just for that whole ride. So I can be a attest to that. And
I agree. And I have heard American players and even European players say that they've been told either by their parents or their agent, at some point in your career, you have to play in a Canadian city. You just need to experience what it's like to play in a country where it matters more than any other country. And I think that's sage advice from agents and parents and advisors to give to players. Yes, when you're losing, it's miserable. Yes, even when you're winning in a place like Toronto, it can be miserable at times because you're in a fishbowl. And some guys, but you should experience that. And even if you only do it for 1 or 2 years and decide it's not for me, I want to go play somewhere like Carolina where they leave me alone, fair. But at least you went and experienced it. And if you play in a Canadian market, then you can just easily jump into the media and get paid, $30, $40, $50,000 a year to be in the media. What a dream.
Who are you talking about, Eric? I don't know. No comment.
Exactly.
I plead the fifth. Eric, anything just coming up at sports, and any stories or anything you want to plug for the listeners?
No, I just, I obviously I'm writing kind of like you are right now about the results after every game or what matter most. But I do have a feature on Dustin Wolf coming out really soon, which
Awesome.
kind of paints the picture historically of what he's doing and and how impactful he's been and what kind of a person he is and all that. So look for that on sportsnet.ca moving forward here.
Awesome. I'm excited to hear about what do you guys call it when he jumps up in the air and like kicks his pad? Is there like a name for that? I don't know.
Yeah,
Just
dangerous. Dangerous is what it is.
dangerous.
That's I asked him if there's any point in time, like when you, like I said, I'm an old man, so like the thought of jumping up and down like that, oh, makes my bones ache. I said, at any point in time as you get older, do you think you'll stop doing that? Because it is his trademark before every period starts. And he said, when I start missing the landing, then I'll stop doing it. Like, and I'm like, at some point he's gotta not stick the landing. I don't know when it'll be, or if maybe there's a rut in the ice, or well, who knows. When he does that, then he'll stop doing it.
They should have like a live cam just to Craig Conroy's face every time he jumps up in the air. That's yeah, exactly.
Like stop it, stop it, Dustin. I will give you a fun fact about Dustin Wolf because I when the mom's trip was on, I had a good chat with his mom, and it was pretty clear from a very young age that he was always going to be a go he always wanted to be a goalie, and whether he was going to make it or not, who knew? But Growing up as an undersized goaltender in California, like, are you kidding me? Who thought this could actually happen? But, she said his whole life he was singularly focused. And when she was pregnant, they would go to Sharks games. And she said that was the only time when he'd ever kick, and which I think is kind of interesting. She said he'd kick like crazy. Maybe it was just a stimulation of the building, or maybe it's just a sign, right? But she saw it as a sign. And then anyway, she said the only other thing he maybe ever would have done in this life, if it wasn't a hockey player, he would have been a dolphin trainer. He's been fascinated with dolphins his whole life.
Oh,
And I asked him about it. He's like, "Oh my God, Mom, shut up! Like, come on! Like, seriously, you're telling people I want to be a dolphin trainer?" But he did admit he's always been fascinated by mammal life because he lived on the ocean. That said, he's terrified to go in the ocean because he's terrified of sharks. So he's like, "I like, dolphins and porpoises and all these other things, but sharks can go to hell." Like he says, "I like swimming pools, and that's the only place I like to go swimming."
Maybe he was just like traumatized by the San Jose Sharks always losing in the conference finals. Maybe it's that too. I don't know.
It
It'd
could be
be
something there. Yeah, I love
that. Well, Eric, thanks so much for taking the time. We always appreciate it here on the show. And good luck. I hope for your sake, your team makes the playoffs. Maybe head to Winnipeg, as at least it'll be summertime in Winnipeg. Or Dallas, maybe, I guess. So
Yeah.
I hope they make it in just for your sake and to have a fun May. And thanks again for coming on.
Hey, thanks. You too, man. I hope your team makes the playoffs and you get some good playoff stories and experience and no sleep. That's all
No
part of the
sleep.
fun of covering a
No
team in
sleep.
the playoffs. It's just all consuming. But keep up the great work, man. I always love being on your podcast. Thanks.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Eric. Have a good one.
See you, buddy.